From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. The city of Philadelphia is reeling from yet another police shooting, as mass protests have sprung up in the wake of the videotaped killing of Walter Wallace Jr. The young black man was gunned down in broad daylight in the middle of the street by officers who were several feet away from him. He was apparently in the middle of a mental health crisis and was waving what appeared to be a knife. Now, Governor Tom Wolf, a week before an election where Pennsylvania plays an outsized role as a swing state, has called in the National Guard to help quell protests. We turn to Chenjerai Kumanyika, assistant professor at Rutgers University School of Communication and Information. Welcome to the program, Chenjerai.
Thank you for having me, Sonali.
First, tell me exactly how you see what it was that took place. As usual, we have this killing where the police claim everything was justified. But now we have videotape, as we've had in so many other instances. And I watched the very difficult to watch videotape. And it certainly didn't seem to me that they needed to gun down a man who was clearly in distress and had a knife and was several feet away from the police. So how is the community interpreting what happened?
So I think, you know, the community in Philadelphia is viewing this as part of a consistent pattern in which police fail to protect our most vulnerable citizens, and in which they really fail to take accountability. And actually, they often come into our communities as kind of an occupying force. I should say that this comes at a really interesting time in Philadelphia, after we had all these uprisings and rebellions in Philadelphia and across the world in response to the George Floyd and Breonna Taylor, murders by police, right? There was a lot of questions being asked and a lot of demands for reimagining public safety in Philadelphia, including some that took the shape of defunding or at least transferring funds from the constantly growing Philadelphia police budget, which has grown to the tune of over $100 million over the past 10 years. So those things were kind of like conversations that were being had. Recently, however, things have shifted a little bit because there's been surging gun violence, what's called gun violence and intra-community violence in Philadelphia. And some folks have used that to try to argue for more police and that, you know, to argue that the police keep us safe. So this incident, I think, challenges that very much, right? I mean, this is West Philly. It's a black community in Cobbs Creek. And we see, you know, this was a family that asked for, you know, an ambulance, I think, really was trying to get an ambulance for a family member who was having a mental health crisis. And what resulted from that was his mother begging for his life and police putting 10 bullets into his body.
The video is extremely difficult to watch. So the woman who's seen there is Walter Jr.'s mother. And it's amazing because she managed to be right up near her son, even while he was waving a knife, whereas police, who were armed with guns, felt the need to shoot at him. They were at least six feet away from what I could, you know, assume watching the video. And it just seemed that there was no reason to shoot him. Also, the family says that the police knew he was having a mental health crisis because they had visited the home numerous times earlier before he was killed. And they knew the history of what the family was struggling with. So, you know, it just seems remarkable. And one has to wonder, would they have treated a white person waving a knife in this way?
Yeah, I mean, I think certainly race, we know consistently that race is an important fact here. But also, I mean, what we basically see is that the police just are not prioritizing protecting people's lives, actually, in this video. I mean, they could say that they were trying to protect the community, but, you know, what you see when you watch that video and you see how far the police officer was, it just seems like there were other options. I mean, some people have talked about tasers and even shooting him. What if they had shot him in a different place in his body? I mean, but I do think that, you know, people in Philly have a sort of imagination that goes beyond, like, the solution to police is just to shoot someone in the leg instead of
which, unfortunately, heart. Joe Biden has said a few times, which is kind of disheartening.
Yeah. So I think that, but you've seen, you know, I think that, you know, it's really, you know, and I think there's even been, I even saw some police officers on social media saying, listen, if someone's there with a knife, I'm going to shoot them. And it just shows that while police talk about these narratives of rebuilding trust as though there was somehow trust in the first place, that actually what we've seen over the, and particularly this since this summer, is police casting off any notion that they're even trying to protect anyone except themselves, right? And just like, you know, just really not really being committed to the priority of public safety.
So let's talk about what's happened in Philadelphia over the past few days. Now, to frame all of this, we are just days away from the most important election of our lifetimes, one in which President Trump has made clear that he stands for what he calls law and order, which is a coded word for basically, you know, police brutality and authoritarian style crackdown. And so this is happening, all of this, in a swing state in Pennsylvania. So how has the community been responding? Give me a sense of what the streets of Philadelphia have been like and whether the specter of the election in a few days has come up.
Well, you know, I mean, I think that everyone is, you know, kind of on edge and very curious to see how things are going to fold next week. This adds to that tension. But, you know, what you saw, I think, on Monday and Tuesday was people coming to the streets, mostly in West Philadelphia and limited to that area, except that last night there was also some forms of uprising and rebellion in the form of property damage in other parts around Aramingo. And the character of those protests was particularly militant, in some instances producing places where police officers were running away. But altogether, you know, on Monday night, what I think is really instructive is that talking about communities that are clearly in pain because of this incident, right, this did not stop the police from arresting what we first heard was 90, and ultimately what became 172 people were arrested on Monday night, right? I think between Monday and Tuesday, a total of 172 people were arrested for felony and misdemeanor, offenses on that night, right? There were also some officers who were injured, but most of these were minor injuries. There was one officer who was struck with a truck, and the person who, is alleged to have done that is actually being held on $1 million bail. But even there, you see, that's horrible for anyone to be hurt, including someone who has a police uniform on. But again, look at how fast that person gets charged, held on $1 million bail, while it's almost impossible to hold police officers accountable when people are killed.
So how does the city of Philadelphia and its elected officials, how are they responding? I mean, this is what's been such an interesting conundrum over the past several years, but especially this summer, where you have these cities where there are Democrats in office at the state level, Democrats in office at the city level, and you have police brutality targeting people of color that's being caught on video. And President Trump has been able to take advantage of this dynamic and say it's the blue cities and states where you're seeing this sort of violence and they're out of control and law and order, rah, rah, rah. So what have elected officials in Philadelphia, the mayor, the governor of Pennsylvania, what have they been saying?
Well, I mean, you can see in the responses from Mayor Kenney and from several of our council members from the police commissioner, Danielle Outlaw, who's a Black woman, that they understand it, that they have to strike a very particular tone. But I think cutting under their statements, which have been mostly vague at this early phase, talking about, you know, needing to gain more information, et cetera, what you see underneath that is a refusal to step out the paradigm of police, of surface police reforms. One aspect of that is, in fact, Chief Outlaw's, appointment in the position that she's in, right? Because, you know, there were those that dreamt that because we had a Black woman, a police commissioner, that this was going to be a transformative, thing in Philadelphia policing. And of course, what we saw this summer revealed that that's not at all the case. In fact, what we actually have to think about is what is the ideological function of having a Black woman, right? And when you have a force of police officers tear gassing people in West Philly, et cetera, right? The other thing that you see is we saw a council member, Jamie Gauthier, who really has been, I think, you know, someone who has really been great on most of the issues affecting just not just economic and racial justice in this city, but even, you know, I think a lot of our city council members seem to be constrained, saying that what we ultimately need here is body cam footage and you know, there's a call for, she says, we need, you know, police officers to recognize the humanity of Black people. Again, I'm pleased with what she's saying there in some sense, except that this fails, we just fail to recognize and grapple with what police are. Why was this institution created in Philadelphia in 1854? At a time when Black people were enslaved. And so if you have an institution that has proved over the course of 150 years that it cannot honor the humanity of Black people, why are we still investing in this institution? And why are we still talking about these piecemeal reforms that have failed for centuries, actually?
So we've had this conversation now in city after city after city, especially since the killing of George Floyd earlier this year. Of course, it's been a much longer than that conversation, but the latest iteration of it, the latest chapter that has really roiled the nation has began, if you could say, with the killing of George Floyd, although, of course, included the killing of Breonna Taylor as well. And how did Philadelphia respond? Tell me about some of the work you've been involved in where community members are being asked to reimagine what safety would look like. Because as you said earlier, it's not just police violence. There's also inter-community and intra-community violence.
Absolutely. I mean, we do have a problem of intra-community violence as we have in many cities. Of course, I think The Guardian released an interesting map that looked at how when the places where there's tends to be tremendous amounts of intra-community violence are also places where we lack jobs, lack educational access, lack other kinds of mental health resources. So those things are linked. And I think what happens is that we really live in a country and at a moment when some of the dominant forces in this society want to think about something called security or safety or public safety without thinking about equality or justice, you know? And so that's what you get, that's when you get policing as the solution. And what policing does in this context and what it's done in Philadelphia is it stops us from asking what actually, you know, produces safety. So, you know, groups like that I've sort of affiliated with, like Movement Alliance Project, certainly Black Lives Matter Philly, there's a Black Radical Coalition, many of their protesters were arrested, and also 215 People's Alliance, you know, and many others, right? I mean, Reclaim, we have a rich progressive community and radical community in Philly. And they have actually been about saying, how can we, number one, can city council actually use its powers to transfer resources out of the police budget into things that actually prevent harm, right? Number one, those very things, if you know, Walter Wallace's mother had been able to call an ambulance and a real mental health worker, we wouldn't be in this situation right now. You know, but also we put out a survey called the Safety We Can Feel Survey, and this is released by Movement Alliance Project. And this is actually inviting solutions, right? Because I think that people usually use police to shut down questions about what actually can prevent harm in our community.
Before we get to some details of that survey, I want to play the opening minutes of a video that you helped to create around the survey. We'll play that for our audience and come back to the greater discussion of what long-term safety really looks like in communities.
This summer, our city of Philadelphia rose up. For 25 days, people from all across the city gathered in the streets to demand an end to the reality we're living in right now. We demanded an end to the reality where police patrol our neighborhoods but fail to get to the root of gun violence and why it spreads in our communities. We demanded an end to the reality where in the middle of a pandemic, too many of us are denied good schools, adequate health care, somewhere to live, jobs, and even enough to eat. We demanded an end to the reality where budgets for those services are cut, while police who tear gas us and terrorize us in our own neighborhoods are given raises. Our communities have faced divestment for decades, and it's still going on. That's why we took to the streets, phones, and social media to demand that our city officials stop giving money to the police and instead invest $120 million where we need it the most. Our city officials heard us, and eventually they voted to reject a $19 million increase to the police budget. But while every other department faced drastic cuts, they still didn't vote to reduce the police budget. At the same time, a surge of gun violence descended in our city. In the month of August, not a single day passed without at least two people being gunned down. 275 people were shot, making August the single bloodiest month since 2006. This has left our communities, mothers, sisters, brothers, fathers, heartbroken and in pain. and it's a familiar pain, a pain the police have not and cannot heal, stemming from violence that more and more policing has not solved.
And we've just been watching a brief video that has been created by Movement of Alliance for Safety that my guest Chenjerai Komanyika has been involved in. Tell me about this particular survey and how you are attempting in Philadelphia to work with the community, with local residents, to really try to understand where the needs are.
Well, you know, I mean, there, you know, this survey was created by Movement Alliance Project, and there's a number of initiatives right now in Philly that are looking at shifting narratives about police, even shifting narratives about how local incidents of harm are covered in local news. And I think that they said, you know, as part of this work, we released a survey because we want to invite people who have all kinds of ideas and insight actually into what actually prevents harm. So for example, there's a group called Yeah Philly. And, you know, I believe the woman's name is Kendra Van De Water. And so she works with youth who have been involved in actually, you know, sometimes involved in committing acts of harm, also have been survivors and you know, of it and victims of it. And she actually gets their insights. Who understands some of these situations better than those youth who are involved in those kinds of things, right? Those are the kind of people who don't have funding while police get all kinds of funding. And what we want to do with this survey is invite all our imagination, our science, our research, right, and our courage to actually shift the narrative, to think about restorative justice, right, and to get a survey and find out what do we actually want? What do we actually envision? And so I think that that survey has existed earlier and was in response to what happened this summer. But I think that it what's happened today really illustrates why this is needed.
How is the movement to, you know, protect the community and the movement that has risen up in response to police killings of George Floyd and now Walter Wallace, how is it perceived by white Philadelphians? Are you seeing, and even really white folks in Pennsylvania at large, are you seeing, because this is a swing state, it is Trump country, unfortunately, many parts of it, not necessarily metropolitan centers like Philadelphia, but are you seeing a polarization within the city and the state?
I think that, you know, there is some polarization. I mean, I think the city of Philadelphia is overwhelmingly a sort of progressive city in its politics. And I think what we saw this summer was maybe people who before were on the sidelines or weren't quite sure. I think in the wake of just the national uprising and the horror of the George Floyd tape, we saw massive amounts of white people coming into the streets. I was there on the streets and I saw them. I was like, wow, there's a lot of people here that normally are not part of our protest community. So that's one thing. But you also do have, you know, you have the police force and families of police officers, and they are a very reactionary force. I mean, they're not just like a force who's kind of, you know, like sort of passive about this. They're very actively, the police commissioner really is known for putting out explicitly racist comments. And so there is that kind of divide. And I think that's important because our prosecutor, Larry Krasner, who has been deemed one of the more progressive prosecutors in the country, I know that he feels those pressures from those different communities. And then, of course, there's the way that this will be framed outside of the city of Philadelphia, both in the state of Pennsylvania and in this election. And I'm sure that there are those who will just, you know, anytime you have a lot of Black people protesting, regardless of the issue at hand, that becomes a context to raise the fears of white people.
So how do you hope that this particular case will turn out? I mean, unfortunately, in order for there to be any semblance of any accountability, you have to have a lining up of just the right kinds of, you know, features of any case where the killing is videotaped, the victim is unarmed, the victim is pure and perfect and has no, you know, background, criminal background, etc. And then and only then might the community get some minor charge for police, and eventually, of course, police are let off the hook and get, you know, a crowdfunding deal or a book deal. I mean, unfortunately, this is the playbook that we've seen time and time again. There just isn't accountability. What are some ways in which, with a prosecutor like Larry Krasner, could Philadelphia change the script?
Well, you know, I mean, I think that, you know, I think that Larry Krasner is certainly part of the solution. I mean, you know, I can't think of another DA or prosecutor that's on the scene right now who has a stronger approach to this than he does. But there, you know, he's also limited by pressures that he feels. So I think, you know, one important priority is to just care for this family and that community of Cobbs Creek, and to just hold them, because this is a traumatic thing to happen. It's traumatic to have your family member killed by the state, you know, in that way. And so that's really important. And of course, we want to think about what justice means and what, you know, charging this officer has to do with that. But since, you know, charging or even sending a police officer to jail, no matter how unlikely that is, that's not going to ultimately deal with this. So groups in Philly are trying to come together and think about what our demands really are around this issue. And I, you know, one thing I do want to point out is that, you know, city council at any moment has the power to call into question the police budget. And I think that that's really important here, because resources in their budget are needed for other things. And so I think certainly between January and March of next year, we'll have a formal chance to weigh in on those budgetary matters. And I really hope that we begin to look at those structural solutions in really important ways and make bold demands. You know, we can't continue.
Was the call to defund the police heated in any way this past year? I mean, especially during the pandemic, we've seen city budgets and state government budgets be decimated, and everyone is suffering. So, you know, in some cities, there's been across the board cuts, but in most, there's been across the board cuts everywhere but police. Is that what happened in Philadelphia?
Yeah, I mean, this what's so interesting is that, you know, as the call for defunding the police emerged, you know, it suddenly could become coherent to people who wouldn't listen before, because it was understood that, wow, we're dealing with like a lack of resources because of the pandemic here. And in that context, you know, where we're cutting schools, cutting all these other things, we're somehow going to continue to increase the police budgets. And that's what's so interesting is that some folks who were against defunding invited us to imagine that police were going to be strapped, you know, starving. They can't do what they got to do. They don't have anything. When in fact, what was really on the table was whether we were going to increase the police budget. And that was certainly what happened in Philadelphia, is that the main achievement was that a increase was stopped, but we did not cut into the police budget in any way. Wow. So that's, I think what's also, I've seen that pattern around the country, right? Like I know they cut, I think they cut $100 million from a police budget in Los Angeles.
But someone pointed out, right.
Someone pointed out that's like the budget of one film. Like that's the budget of Frozen, you know.
Right. And it was the increase in budget that gets cut rather than the budget itself. Meanwhile, everybody else has to deal with austerity measures. Chandra, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. Stay safe out there. Appreciate your time.
Absolutely. Thank you for covering this.
My guest has been Chenjerai Kumanyika. He is an assistant professor at Rutgers University School of Communication and Information, and he's been very active in the movement around police brutality and aimed at police brutality in Philadelphia. We've been discussing specifically the police killing of Walter Wallace Jr. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupatsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RU with Sonali.